Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of February 21st and 22nd of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In headlines, a couple is free on bail awaiting decision. Married Cuban immigrants are free on bail while the court decides. They were detained after a routine check-in by Michelle Breidenbach. M. Breidenbach of Syracuse.com. Two SUNY Upstate Medical University hospital employees detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are now free on bail while the court decides appeals of their deportation order. The married couple spent 3 months at the Batavia Detention Center. A federal immigration judge in Batavia allowed them to be released on $5,000 bond while the court considers an appeal to their deportation order. They were taken into custody in October when they appeared for a routine check-in. The men are originally from Cuba. Gonzalez is a supervisor in the hospital's environmental services department, and Hidalgo is a janitor in the same department. They were married last year and own a home in North Syracuse. Judges last month ordered the men deported to Ecuador, a country neither man has ever visited. The men argued they would be persecuted both in Cuba and Ecuador because they are gay. They both requested asylum protection in the United States and had passed an immigration test required to prove there is a credible threat to their lives in Cuba, their relatives told the Post Standard when they were detained in October. They appealed the deportation orders in late January. Members of two hospital workers' unions, United University Professions and the Civil Service Employees Association, raised money for their bond and legal fees. Hundreds of people have rallied outside the federal building for their release. Governor Kathy Hochul met last fall with their family members. Ally Cottrell, the president of the hospital CSEA chapter, said the release of the men proves the system can work if people are afforded the process. Justice must remain accessible to working class families who come to this country seeking opportunity, Cottrell said. These individuals did everything they were asked to do. They worked, contributed to the community, and showed up for their hearings. Cottrell said union members will continue to advocate for Gonzalez and Hidalgo to be awarded asylum. Their release reflects what can happen when a community comes together and refuses to stay silent, he said. It is a testament to the power of unity, advocacy, and due process. In Syracuse, landlords and tenants debate the impact of a new eviction law. Advocates say good cause eviction laws will steady the rental market. Landlords say it'll make things worse, by Chris Baker. For 2 hours Thursday, landlords, tenants, and activists argued over a proposed law that would dramatically reshape Syracuse's rental market. At the heart of the debate, will the good cause eviction law help tenants or make things worse? More than 100 people packed the Common Council chambers for a town hall style meeting to discuss the merits of Good Cause, a state law that caps rental hikes and adds lease renewal protections for tenants. The council is scheduled to vote next week on whether Syracuse will join the cities like Rochester, Albany, and Binghamton in adapting the law. From around the world, Andrew's arrest forces the British monarchy into survival mode, by Joe Mayers of Bloomberg News. Until Thursday morning, it had been nearly four centuries since the arrest of a senior British royal. On his 66th birthday, the late Queen Elizabeth II's favorite son was detained on suspicion of misconduct in public office. By evening, the former prince was released from police custody. But the ongoing investigation will unpick years of lurid allegations about Andrew's ties to the disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein that have heaped embarrassment on his brother, King Charles III. The police raid on Andrew's Norfolk home and Royal Lodge caps an already tumultuous decade for the Windsors, with the family now facing unprecedented scrutiny and uncertainty amid the fallout from the Epstein files published in January by the U.S. Department of Justice. Some royal observers say the arrest of the king's brother represents as grave a challenge to the institution of the 1936 abdication crisis or the death of Diana, the former Princess of Wales. It comes after it's been buffered in recent events in recent years by events such as the king's own cancer diagnosis, the estrangement of Prince Harry, and the death of the late Queen in 2022. The royal family will keep calm and carry on, but it will be tested as never before, said Richard Fitzwilliams, a royal commentator. There is a risk that members of the family will be interviewed by police as part of the police probes into Andrew. The DOJ files contain emails indicating that the Mountbatten Windsor had advocated for Epstein on a visit with Queen Elizabeth to the United Arab Emirates in 2010, and that he had shared information acquired in the course of the UK government trade envoy role he held from 2001 to 2011 with the disgraced financier and his associates. NASA aims to send Artemis astronauts around the moon in March. After acing the latest rock fuel testing, NASA announced Friday that it plans to send Artemis astronauts on a moon mission next month. This is really getting real, and it's time to get serious and getting excited as well, said Lori Glaze, NASA's Exploration Systems Development Chief. While more work remains at the launch pad, officials expressed confidence in being ready to launch four astronauts on the Artemis II lunar fly around the moon as soon as March 6th from Florida's Kennedy Space Center. To keep their options open, three Americans and one Canadian prepared to go into the mandatory two-week health quarantine on Friday night in Houston. The space agency only has 5 days in March to launch the crew aboard the Space Launch System rocket before standing down until the end of April. In Syracuse basketball sports news, could North Carolina be without its two top players today? North Carolina has been without Caleb Wilson and Henri Vessar for three games, including Tuesday's 82-58 loss at North Carolina State by Mike Waters of Syracuse.com. Syracuse basketball will host North Carolina today in the second meeting of the season, but the Tar Heels lineup could be much different this time around. North Carolina has been without its top two scorers in each of its last two games, and the status of each remains in doubt ahead of the Tar Heels' visit to the JMA Wireless Dome on Saturday. Caleb Wilson, a 6'9 freshman who was projected as the lottery pick in this year's NBA draft, leads North Carolina in scoring and rebounding, averaging 19.8 points and 9.4 rebounds per game. Henri Vessar is second to Wilson in both categories. The 7-foot transfer from Arizona averages 16.4 points and 9 rebounds. In North Carolina's 87-77 win over Syracuse on February 2nd, Wilson recorded 22 points and 9 rebounds, while Vessar posted 17 points and 11 boards. Wilson reportedly suffered a hand injury in a game against Miami on February 10th. It's doubtful that Wilson will risk playing so soon with the broken bone, even though it's his non-shooting hand. Vessar has missed the last two games due to the flu and what has been described as lower body injuries. His outlook is day-to-day, North Carolina coach Hubert Davis said after the Tar Heels lost to North Carolina State on Tuesday. Every day he's getting better in regard to the lower extremities. He's getting better also with his flu. He's making huge strides every day, and every day we'll evaluate and see what he's available to practice. And then when he's able to practice, we'll see when he's able to play. Syracuse is 15-12, 6-8 in the ACC, and North Carolina is 20-6, 8-5. And they're scheduled to tip off at 1 p.m. this afternoon. The game will air nationally on ABC. The ACC's Player Ability Report is updated the night before the games, which would mean there will be some indication on Wilson and Vessar's status Friday night, and then 2 hours prior to the game on Saturday morning. In Syracuse lacrosse, the Orange begins its longest road stretch in 54 years. Number 1 Syracuse travels to number 14 Harvard this afternoon by Brent X. The number 1 Syracuse University men's lacrosse team begins its longest stretch of road games since 1972 Saturday afternoon. SU's next six games are away from the JMA Wireless Dome. Syracuse Fogo John Mullen throttled Harvard twice last year, winning a combined 52 faceoffs in two matches. Both Syracuse and Harvard entered today's game with top five defenses. In Syracuse basketballs, the question is, were expectations too optimistic about Nathan George by Donna DeTota? The Syracuse point guard is shooting a little better this year, but turning it over more. Way back in April, Syracuse basketball fans heard potentially transformative news. Nathan George, a 6'3" sophomore coming off an honorable mention ACC season at Georgia Tech, committed to playing basketball for the Orange in 2025-26. He was then ranked the 13th best point guard portal prospect by 247 Sports and the 50th best overall transfer player, and he seemed like a significant upgrade from Jaquan Carlos, the highest-ranked player SU pulled from the portal. And the Orange, for years, is searching for its next great point guard. They seem set, at least in that position. All things considered, George is about the same player this season as he was last season, which prompts the questions, did we expect too much? Were we swayed by the SU staff's evident joy in securing a commitment from him? Lots of things can impact the way a point guard performs. His teammates, the program style of play, and just because a guy plays well in one system doesn't mean he'll play well for someone else. In Olympic headlines, the Winter Olympic medals table at Milan Cortina, we've gone through 99 of 116 total events by the time this newspaper was printed. Norway leads with a total of 37 medals, 17 of them gold. United States is in second place with 27 medals, 9 of those gold. Norway broke the record for the most golds in a single winner's games this week. And this weekend, we'll be wrapping up the Olympic Games. Tonight will be the, I believe, final Olympics. Yes, at 8 p.m. They will be having speed skating, bobsled, freestyle skiing, figure skating, and 11:30, the late night one will be freestyle skiing and speed skating. The tomorrow will be the gold medal game. In curling, top-ranked Canada was upset, and the Swiss beat the U.S. Canada's controversial men's team will have the curling power's last chance at the Olympic gold at the games, with Canada already shut out of the mixed team event medals. The country's top-ranked women were upset by Anna Hasselberg, Sweden, in Friday's semifinals. Sweden, ranked number 12, will face Switzerland for gold on Sunday. Switzerland beat the United States 7-4, and they'll be aiming for their first women's gold at the Olympics. Canada will play the U.S. for bronze today. In the men's competition, Canada faces Britain for gold today. In other sports news, the checkered flags dried up inside Kyle Busch's stunning fall from royalty. A driver who once made winning look easy now admits he was forced out twice and faces the reality that talent alone can't bridge the competitive gap. He's quoted as saying, "If I don't ever win it, the Daytona 500, I'm going to be happy with not winning it. I've pretty much fulfilled my career. If it were to end yesterday, I'd be happy with everything." Taking a look at the weather, the extended forecast for Sunday, 35 degrees with mostly cloudy skies and some light snow showers, 61% chance of precipitation. On Monday, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers with a 46% chance of precipitation. Tuesday, a high of 24, mostly cloudy and a light chance of snow. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a light wintry mix with a high of 37. Thursday, a high of 36, mostly cloudy and a light wintry mix possible. And Friday, partly cloudy with a light wintry mix possible. But we are going to miss the big storm that's developing out in the Atlantic, which is great news. Around the region, temperatures were in the 30s in Albany, 40s in Buffalo and Ithaca. Lake George was in the 30s with 40s in Oneonta and Rochester, and Syracuse and Watertown in the 30s. Around the United States, Anchorage average was in the teens of 15 degrees, Chicago in the mid-30s, Honolulu in the 80s, Las Vegas in the mid-50s, Nashville in the 60s, Phoenix also in the 60s, and Seattle in the mid-40s. And around the world, Acapulco checking in at 87 degrees, London 51, Paris 52, Rome 58, and Vancouver at 38. And checking the golden snowball statistics for the snow season, Syracuse is still leading with 127.8 inches, and that is our normal season average. The seasonal snowfall record, we're not even going to come close. It was 192 inches in 1992, and that is a good thing. Yes. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In business news, a new arcade for grown-ups has golf simulators, wings, and beer. By Charles Miller, Jeff Herbert, and Elizabeth Duran, staff writers for the Post Standard. If you're a golfer in central New York, winter probably has you doing one of three things: checking the forecast, like it might suddenly change its mind, watching reruns of last year's Masters, or apologizing for the dents in the drywall after a few practice swings in the living room. It's been that kind of winter. Five Iron Golf, an indoor golf and entertainment venue with high-tech simulators, duck pin bowling, a full kitchen and bar, opened Monday at 400 South Salina Street in downtown Syracuse. Five Iron Golf currently operates in more than 30 U.S. cities nationwide, with an additional international expansion underway. It offers a place to swing a club without waiting for the snow to melt, exactly the kind of release valve golfers and anyone tired of being cooped up has been looking for. Inside the 11,200 square foot space in the city center building, the former Sibley's department store, the atmosphere lends somewhere between a sports bar and a practice facility. TVs line the rooms, a long bar with 10 draft beers lines anchor the space, and simulator bays line the walls, complete with leather sofas, chairs, and high-top tables. It's a sports bar, so you can catch your favorite games, said franchisee Chase Rogan. You can play your favorite course or just have fun with games. It's got something for everyone. The Syracuse facility has 8 TrackMan simulators, the radar-based technology used by professionals, with access to 300-plus courses around the world, as well as games designed for casual players. One simulator also includes a multi-sport setup with options such as soccer, baseball, frisbee golf, cornhole, and other interactive games. It's just basically an arcade for grown-ups, said General Manager Sean Larson. You can play Pebble Beach, you can play putt-putt, you can bowl, all the while eating and having a beer. Guests can book simulator time by half hour or hour blocks, join leagues, host parties, or sign up for memberships that include daily play windows and discounts on food, drinks, and instruction. 2 PGA certified professionals offer lessons, and members can receive swing evaluations to establish a baseline or fine-tune their game. This is a great option over the winter, especially this winter, to work on your game, Larson said. No clubs? No problem. The venue offers right and left-handed sets, along with women's and juniors clubs, plus Callaway demo equipment. The experience isn't limited to golf. Larson describes the menu as upscale bar fare, including personal pizzas, tacos, burgers, sandwiches such as turkey clubs and Caesar wraps, along with several salads. The bar has signature cocktails. DeWitt's Honeycomb Bakery is for sale, but the family says it isn't closing. The family-owned bakery, which opened in November of 2020 in Nottingham Plaza at 315 Nottingham Road, was recently listed for sale as a turnkey operation, including its equipment, recipes, and brand. The list describes the shop as a successful scratch bakery with strong community support, steady growth, and an established customer base. Kayla Brandt, who owns the bakery with her father Chuck, said she recently signed a new 3-year lease. The sale is part of long-term planning, not an immediate exit. Another Denny's has closed in central New York. The Denny's Diner in Herkimer shut down in February, according to CNYNews.com. An employee told Town Square Media publication that the closure is permanent. Denny's did not announce the closing in advance or offer an explanation why. There is no answer at the Herkimer restaurant phone number, but the company website now lists the restaurant at 701 Mohawk Street as closed. Denny's previously said it planned to close 150 underperforming restaurants by the end of 2025. According to its website, 27 Denny's diners remain open in New York State, including Amherst, Batavia, Binghamton, Cicero, Cortland, Depew, East Greenbush, and more. Denny's, which has more than 1,200 restaurants nationwide, has undergone multiple changes recently. The brand went private last month, including a $620 million buyout by a group that includes Tri Artisan Capital Advisors, Treble Capital Group, and Denny's franchisee Yadav Enterprises. Denny's, also known as Denny's Diner, began in 1953 as a donut stand and expanded to a full-service restaurant, and the company started franchising in 1963. Chick-fil-A plans a Camillus restaurant. They want to open its fourth fast food restaurant in Onondaga County. The popular chicken brand is proposing to open at the former Denny's on West Genesee Street in Fairmount. The shuttered Denny's is on an outparcel in the Camillus Commons Plaza. The Denny's in Camillus closed in March of 2025. Plans submitted to the Town of Camillus Planning Board by Benderson Development call for the former Denny's to be torn down and a new building housing the Chick-fil-A will be constructed with a drive-through. The new restaurant would be 5,483 square feet, according to the application. There would be new sidewalks and landscaping, and it will be the fourth Chick-fil-A in Onondaga County. The newest one opened in DeWitt in August, and there are also restaurants in Cicero and Clay. In Verona, the Verona Resort expansion will create up to 300 new jobs, according to Rick Moriarty. The United Indian Nation will create 200 to 300 new jobs when the latest expansion of its Turning Stone Casino Resort opens later this year. The 258-room Crescent Hotel and the Salt Seafood and Raw Bar are scheduled to open June 29th. The Grand Expo, a new convention center facility, is set to open on Labor Day. Joel Barkin, a vice president for strategic communications and community engagement for the United Indian Nation, said hiring will start in March for the new jobs and will ramp up as the new attractions debut. The 200 to 300 new jobs will be created over the next couple of years, he said. With 5,200 employees, the federally recognized Indian Nation is already one of the largest employers in central New York. The hotel, seafood restaurant, and convention center facility, all part of a $370 million expansion named Turning Stone Evolution, was initially scheduled to come online in 2027. The nation announced in October, however, that the expansion was ahead of schedule and would open this year. The expansion of Verona will more than double Turning Stone's existing event space. An exterior construction elevator collapsed on January 13th as it was being disassembled from the seven-story Crescent Hotel, causing minor injuries to five subcontractor employees. Turning Stone officials said the accident did not delay progress on the hotel because the elevator was no longer needed. The nation last week reported a record-breaking economic impact for 2025. Expenditures on capital projects, employee payroll, and supply chain vendors totaled $855 million in 2025, $150 million more than what the nation spent in 2024. The nation included more than $542 million in capital spending and vendor payments across the nation enterprises, with $377 million going to New York vendors. It also paid more than $305 million in wages, health care, and retirement savings benefits for its employees. Much of the capital and vendor spending was for the Turning Stone Evolution, the largest expansion in the history of the resort and casino. In September, the nation opened a new 300-square-foot Verona Collective cannabis dispensary in Bridgeport. In November, the nation opened a new hotel, a restaurant, and group event space as part of a $50 million expansion at its Point Place Casino, also in Bridgeport. The nation's business growth also means more revenue for the state and the 10 central New York counties where, under the 2013 covenant, Turning Stone has exclusive casino rights. The payments totaled $94.3 million in 2025, up $3.4 million from the $90.9 million in 2024. Under the 2013 agreement, Turning Stone pays 25% of its slot machine revenues to the state and the counties as part of a settlement that ended land claims and other legal disputes between the nation, the state, and Madison and Oneida counties. The nation has paid out a total of $874.9 million under the agreement and said it expects the number to rise to about $1 billion by the end of 2026. In banking news, Canandaigua National opened its first Syracuse branch by Renee Fox. 3 more branches are planned. People in Syracuse now have another community bank to choose from for loans, savings, and checking accounts. Canandaigua National Bank opened its first branch in Syracuse last month and plans to open 3 more before the end of the year. It expects to hire 15 to 20 more employees as those branches open. The branches mark the bank's expansion into central New York and will push the number of its branches to nearly 30. Founded in Canandaigua, the bank's existing offices are in Monroe and Ontario counties in and near Rochester. The Onondaga County branches are under construction by local contractors, said Gwen Crawford, chief retail officer for the bank. They're being built from the ground up, Crawford said. She said she declined to reveal how much money the bank is spending on the expansion. The 333 West Washington Street branch in Syracuse is open. Customers will see openings at 6805 East Genesee Street in DeWitt, 8065 Brewerton Road in Cicero, and 7507 Oswego Road in Liverpool. The bank had captured its market share in Monroe and Ontario counties, said Charlie Vita, chief lending officer. Frank Hamlin, president and CEO, said the bank carefully researched which market in New York to venture to next. That research showed the bank could support economic growth in the region, Vita said. The move is part of a strategy to keep spreading through the region. We've hired local employees who are experienced, engaged, and already doing business, demonstrating what sets us apart, Vita said. Crawford said the banks will have local underwriters making decisions on lending and will serve commercial and residential accounts, offer consumer loans, mortgages, and other services. To attract business, Crawford said the bank will attempt to set itself apart from others by creating a cozy environment. In other business news, Business Leaders Sunday Conversation, National Grid Sally Labrera says to think beyond your own lane by Marie Morelli. Sally Labrera specializes in running huge, complex, always-on systems, a train line, New York City subways, and now National Grid's electricity and natural gas delivery in New York. Labrera sees a through line to her first job as a high school math teacher in San Francisco. She leads the utility's 11,000 employees, serving the energy needs of 4.2 million residents and businesses across the state. It is a challenging time. Micron Technology's arrival and artificial intelligence are supercharging the demand. Aging grid infrastructure needs to be replaced, and rising energy costs are squeezing customers. Labrera hears utility bill complaints all the time. She emphasizes that roughly half of your bill covers taxes and the energy itself. The other half is the delivery costs, which covers operations and infrastructure, some of which is 80 to 100 years old. National Grid also has bill assistance programs to help customers manage costs. We work every day to strive to drive efficiencies into our business, she says. Folks' concerns around the cost of energy are real, and we're doing everything we can to reduce those costs at every opportunity, or at least minimize their growth. In October, Labrera received SUNY Oswego's Presidential Medal in recognition of her contributions to the energy and national transportation business. From the opinions page and letter to the editor, support CNY SPCA's new leadership as it works on righting the ship. To the editor, in January, the CNY SPCA reached a state of upheaval so egregious that the staff walked out. This bold move carried a list of their grievances. They demanded that the shelter's entire board of directors resign, and days later, the board did. Now, a new board has stepped in. We are grateful they agreed to take on such a monumental but daunting task. We cautiously believe that the very good days will lie ahead. Our caution is a reflex. Too many resets over the past years have resulted in the shelter's continued deterioration. Still, today, there is reason to be hopeful. The new board brings a history of collaboration and respect for appropriate transparency. The members offer experience in veterinary care, financial and human resource management, nonprofit law, animal cruelty intervention, volunteering, business, and marketing. They have solid records of respect and compassion for people and animals alike. But the board has its work cut out for it. Members must attend to an exploding population of homeless animals. Fragile relationships with staff and potential donors need mending. People wanting to surrender or adopt pets, as well as the public, look for reassurance. To make meaningful changes, the board must listen and learn how all facets of the shelter run and mesh. That takes time, but is only way to find out what is broken. The board has begun that process. Assessing policies, practices, systems, and the physical plant is a long, slow job. Repair and rebuilding demand it. Fixing to Help is a very small nonprofit. In their 8 short years, we learned firsthand the time and sweat it takes to pivot, adapt, and grow, and the positive power of a supportive, understanding community. We urge Central New York to join us in supporting the SPCA's new board of directors. They need time, patience, and our good faith as they begin to unravel and fix decades of poor management. Only then can the CNY SPCA ascend to its position of leadership in the humane care of our community's animals. By Marsha Tupper, on behalf of the Board of Directors of Fixing to Help, CNY Spay and Neuter Incentive Program from Manlius. Around the region, things that are happening, the Syracuse Winterfest is going on this weekend at the various spots downtown Syracuse. On Monday, the Beaver Lake Photography Group will meet at the Beaver Lake Nature Center for educational presentations, and they offer the community a chance to share their photographs. It's 6 to 8 on Monday, every fourth Monday of the month. The Art Surge of Winter Wonderland of the ARC of Onondaga County, they're inviting children with developmental and intellectual disabilities to a 4-day program to learn about creatures that could live in the frosty environment between the ground and the snowbank. Children will also create their own animals, imagery, or real, to be presented during the family reception on the final day. Registration is required by contacting Sarah Clark at sarah.clark@archon.org. It will run from 4 to 6 Monday through Thursday at their facility at 600 South Wilbur Ave in Syracuse. On Tuesday, Women's Climbing Night will be open to all women and non-binary folks at the Central Rock Gym. Every last Tuesday of the month, this happens, a non-instructional bouldering session. An event welcomes climbers of all skill levels to try their hand at climbing and making friends with fellow climbers. 7 p.m. on Tuesday at 600 North Franklin Street in Syracuse. You can enjoy a night of testing your knowledge with friends and family in a weekly event hosted by Orange Trivia Company at Talking Cursive Brewing Company. This is 7 p.m. on Tuesdays at 301 Erie Boulevard West in Syracuse. On Wednesday, you can explore Mad Leach's artwork on trans life and gender dysphoria during their artist talk at SUNY Oswego's Tyler Art Gallery. Through the oil paintings featured in the exhibit She Is On Her Way, Leach discusses femininity and the complex relationship of discovery, denial, and acceptance that occurs throughout gender transition and exploration. 12:45 p.m. on Wednesday at 7060 Route 104 in Oswego. You can show your talent during this Community Folk Art Center open mic event called Snaps and Taps. It happens on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. at 805 East Genesee Street in Syracuse. Funkin' Waffles will host a performance by indie rock band Big Shrimp, known for distinctive sound and original writing. The Big Shrimp produces entertainment, high-energy performance at 8 p.m. at 305-313 South Clinton Street in Syracuse. The U.S. Navy Band Wind Ensemble will perform at the Capitol Theater in Rome on Thursday. They will feature works by John Philip Sousa and Aaron Copland and more contemporary music from John Williams. The U.S. Navy Band is celebrating its 101st year of touring the United States. Free tickets can be reserved by checking the website. From 7 to 9 p.m. Thursday, doors will open at 6220 West Dominic Street in Rome. As part of Utica College's Thursday Free Time series, the public is welcome to enjoy Louis Malle's classic 1958 French film, Elevator to the Gallows. It is known for its improvisational soundtrack by beloved jazz musician Miles Davis, and its position as one of the first films of the French New Wave film movement. It will be shown at the McFarlane Auditorium in DePernell Hall, 7 p.m. Thursday, 1600 Burstone Road in Utica. The Everson Museum of Art is offering an opportunity to physically touch history through its presentation of a 3D printed replica of the Scarab Vase, a pottery piece that Adelaide Robineau worked on carving for over 1,000 hours in 1910. You can join presenters Stephanie and Isaac Budman as they explain their 2-year process in understanding how to scan and create a replica to touch. 6 p.m. on Thursday at the Museum, 401 Harrison Street in Syracuse. On Friday, if you're looking for an outdoor activity to do with the family, there'll be a 3 to 4 mile educational hike for you at Green Lakes. Join an educator to walk through the old growth forest and learn about the preserved area and its trees. Expect moderate to difficult terrain, wear steady shoes, and bring some water. You can gather at the Environmental Education Center at 7900 Green Lakes Road in Fayetteville. It will be from 10 to 11:30 on Friday. The Hangar Theater of Illica hosts Lunazza, an award-winning Irish folk music band named after a Celtic festival that celebrates the Irish god Lugh. With over 2,500 performances across 35 countries, this band is one of the most influential in the history of traditional folk music. It'll be 8 p.m. Friday at 801 Tangahock Boulevard in Ithaca. On Saturday, there'll be a CNY Regional Market to host an event celebrating Black History Month and supporting Fired Up for Youth Incorporated. The gala will celebrate the achievements and legacy of Black leaders within the Syracuse community. It is open to community members, civic leaders, open business, local businesses, and artists. You'll enjoy live music, dinner, and an awards ceremony 6 to 10 p.m. next Saturday, 2100 Park Street in Syracuse. Beak and Skiff Apple Hill Campus will host a St. Patrick's Day celebration in the 1911 Tasting Room, where attendees can enjoy Irish-inspired food and drinks alongside a live music performance by the Flying Column. Admission includes festive green cider, food voucher for a meal and dessert, and a 1911 established swag bag. Next Saturday, 6 p.m., 2708 Lord Hills Road in Lafayette. The Steeple Hill Coffee House will host Brian Thomas and the Strikes for an evening of music at the United Church of Fayetteville. Storyteller and folk musician Thomas will explore nature with the themes of love and loss. He's backed by the Strikes, a group of folk, Americana, blues, Irish, and country roots. Food and drink will be available 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, 310 East Genesee Street in Fayetteville. You can join the Syracuse Orchestra for a concert at St. Paul's Church featuring folk music-inspired program by Eastern European composers Botok, Kodaly, Dvorak, and Ligeti. From folk dances to Ligeti's concert romanesque about his childhood in Romania, this concert is a feast of culture. 7 p.m. next Saturday at 3 p.m. March 1st. Doors will open an hour before the concert, 220 East Fayette Street in Syracuse. On March 1st, there'll be a Chili Bowl Festival. The Thornton Park Association event at Thornton Park House features vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and meat options and benefits efforts to restore and preserve Thornton Park. You can try Chef Ginty's creamy chicken chili, fan favorite Syracuse chili, which features Middle Ages Syracuse Pale Ale and Gianelli sausage, and vegan and gluten-free red bean Westcott chili, celebrating the neighbor's hippie culture. Sweet and savory sides are available, such as gluten-free cornbread and home-brewed root beer. You can choose indoor or outdoor seating, 11:30 a.m. March 1st on Thornton Park Drive in Syracuse. And the Cara Fund Fashion Show is an annual event that benefits the Cara Fund, a nonprofit supporting seriously ill children and their families. It's hosted at the Emerson, and the event will feature brunch bites, mock and cocktails, raffles, silent auctions, flash tattoos, and more. Tickets are at Eventbrite. It'll be noon, March 1st, doors at 11:30 a.m., 230 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the CNY Inspirations column, A Grandmother's Lesson, Don't Be Ugly to Others by Mary Beth DeMarco. In an effort to guide our behavior as children, many parents or grandparents passed on one maxim or another as we were growing up. One of my spiritual mentors was raised by her Native American grandmother. Living on a farm near the woods, Arla was taught to respect and learn from nature, especially the trees, the wildlife, Grandmother Moon, and everything she encountered in the woods. The life advice her grandmother gave her as a child was, "Don't be ugly." Arla's grandmother taught her to never say anything bad about someone, never do anything to harm another, and refrain about thinking ugly about anyone. She was taught that ugly words and actions not only hurt others, but hurt us. In fact, even ugly thoughts can reverberate into negative energy, which goes out into the world and often back into our bodies. My own mother always said, if you can't say something nice about someone, don't say anything at all. As a young child, I could only understand this meant I shouldn't call other kids mean names. As I grew older, her words would often come back to me, and I would reflect more deeply about the meaning. How quaint and simplistic it sounds, yet how difficult it can be at times to refrain from saying something unkind or untrue, and to avoid gossiping about people. I'm grateful to have my mother's guidance, and I hope I've been able to pass that on in my family. In our various religious traditions, I think about how many of us have grown up with similar teachings about not being judgmental, about being kind, or about trying to love each other unconditionally. May the advice our parents and grandparents live deep within us, offering us clear and constant challenges. Mary Beth DeMarco attends the Syracuse Friends meetings and is a member of the Interfaith Works Roundtable of Faith Leaders. She is the author of Inner Stillness, a photographic mindfulness meditation book. This feature is coordinated by the PostStandardSyracuse.com and Interfaith Works of Central New York. In outdoor news, Freeze Gives the Epic Opportunity and Action Was Nonstop by Steve Featherstone. A few days before the city of Oswego banned ice fishing on the Oswego River due to its safety concerns, Troy Ray of Constantia and his buddies had a once-in-a-lifetime experience at the mouth of the river catching scores of brown trout and steelhead. The action was nonstop, Ray said, sun up to sundown, and included fresh cookie cutters to trophy-class trout that were moving through the river in pods numbering 20-plus fish. For the first time in 11 years, Owasco Lake is frozen enough for Freddie Kwong of Endicott to get out on the hard water. The last week, he hit a lake trout jackpot, catching four Lakers before noon while sitting over 166 FOW using his swim bait as a three-quarter-ounce jig head. His biggest Laker measured 30 inches. In a recent sub-zero afternoon, Vic Thibault of Burt uncorked a massive walleye from the ice on Lake Ontario's Chaumont Bay with Chaumont Masters Guide Service. Thibault was using a Swedish Pimple in a 26 FOW, and it was Thibault's personal best, measuring 30.5 inches and weighing over 13 pounds. This one's going on the wall, he said. Terry Wicks of Brewerton was recently fishing the flats by Frenchman's Island on Oneida Lake when a big walleye nailed his jig and tipped it with a spike. The fish measured 25 inches, huge for Oneida Lake, and Wicks dropped her back in the hole. As a rule, Wicks releases any walleye over 21 inches, he says, because it's important to keep the big breeders doing what they do, making more walleye. And because February is Black History Month, there was a large article tracing upstate's Black history in the 9 must-see historic spots by Chuck D'Imperio. Upstate is dotted with reminders of people and places that were key in the struggle to end slavery in the 1800s. Here's a list of several locations to commemorate the struggle and inspiration of those who operated the Underground Railroad and other freedom folk entities in our region of the Empire State. Sojourner Truth statue is in Highland Falls. Israel AME Church in Albany, the oldest Black church in upstate New York, was established in 1828. The Jerry Rescue Monument in Syracuse, located in Syracuse's Clinton Square, depicting the moment when William Jerry Henry, who escaped slavery in Missouri, found refuge in Syracuse in a desperate break for freedom. The North Star Underground Rail Museum is in Aussable Chasm in the Adirondacks. Lewiston Landing Park in Lewiston, directly on the Niagara River with Canada, literally yards away over the western New York border, could have been the final stop for many who traveled through the New York Underground Railroad. In Auburn, it was one of the most leading centers in the abolition movement, and there are several important places to visit. The first is the home of Harriet Tubman, the Moses of her people, and the most famous person associated with the Underground Railroad. Also, William Seward's house, which served as a way station for people escaping slavery, and is a museum well worth a couple hours of your time. The National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum in Peterborough, a 1820 church building just off the Village Green, is about 25 miles southeast of Syracuse. the old Fort Museum in Fort Edward. It includes artifacts and a history of local resident Solomon Northrup, who was made famous in the Oscar-winning movie 12 Years a Slave. And the Frederick Douglass Museum in Rochester, the voice of abolition, where he lived for 25 years, and his name graces public buildings, bridges, streets, and even an airport. There's also 10 must-visit aviation museums around New York by Chuck D'Imperio. In Red Hook, there's the old Rhinebeck Aerodrome. Of course, the Plattsburgh Air Force Museum in Plattsburgh. The Glenn Curtis Museum in at 8410 Route 51 is one of the premier aviation museums in the Northeast. The National Soaring Museum on Soaring Hill Drive in Elmira. The National Warplane Museum in Big Train Lake in Geneseo. The Niagara Aerospace Museum in Niagara Falls. The Buffalo Erie County Naval and Military Park in Buffalo. The Sampson Memorial Air Force and Naval Museum in Romulus. The Griffiths Business and Technology Park on Phoenix Drive in Rome, where you can see that legendary B-52 bomber. And the Wings of Eagles Discovery Center on Daniel Zenker Drive in Horseheads. You are listening to a recording of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Although the weather doesn't feel like it, it's time to start thinking about summer camp programming. 17 programs available in Central New York will fill up fast, by Emily Kulkus. Congratulations, parents, paying off your holiday credit card bills. Now breathe easy for a few months, but not quite. It's time to load up the plastic once again with summer camp registrations. Paying for summer camp always feels like buying a new roof or paying the insurance bill. It's necessary and an often pricey evil. Many families need kid coverage during the summer. The tough news is the price tag. The good news is Central New York has tons of good day and overnight camp programs for kids as young as preschool and sometimes into high school. The two things to note, there's essentially an extra week of summer this year compared to last. Labor Day was early in 2025, which meant summer camp planning wrapped up by the last week in August. Labor Day isn't until September 7th this year, which means many parents will need coverage from August 31st to September 4th, and camps that week are slim. Lastly, if I've learned anything about planning for summer camps, it's talking with other parents is one of the most helpful things you can do. Happy planning. Here's Beaver Lake Nature Summer Center, a day camp in Baldwinsville. Children can enter starting with grades 1 through 6 on a one-week option for the 7th and 8th graders the week of August 3rd. Registration opens 9 a.m. this coming Tuesday. Camp Tululi is a day and overnight camp in Pennellville. Pre-K through 7th grade is a 7-week camp, and registration is now open. The Everson Museum of Art has a day camp in downtown Syracuse. Registration is not yet posted for this year. The Girl Scouts of New York Penn Pathways summer camps are day and overnight camps in Tully, Ithaca, Deposit, and Harrisville. From kindergarten to 12th grade, weekly options start July 6th through August 21st, and registration is now open. Jewish Community Center of Syracuse has day camps in DeWitt, ages 6 weeks old through 10th grade. Weekly sessions June 29th through August 12th, before and after daycare is available, and registration opens at 7 a.m. on March 2nd. The Lemoyne College Youth Programs are day camps in the arts, sports, college prep, and coding at Lemoyne College in Syracuse. Ages grades 4 through 12, and each camp and theme is open to a different age range. Weekly sessions will begin in July, and registration is now open. Lord's Camp is a day and overnight camp at Skinny Atlas Lake, ages 7 to 14. Registration is now open. Manlius Pebble Hill Summer Day Program in Manlius, with registration now open. Milton J. Rubenstein Museum of Science and Technology Summer Camp is a day camp in downtown Syracuse. Registration opens April 1st. Red House Summer Camps, day camps in downtown Syracuse. Registration is now open. Summer Zoo Camp at the Rosamond Gifford Zoo has a day camp in Syracuse. Half day ages 4 to 5, full day ages 6 to 11, and junior zookeeper camps for 7th through 12th graders from July 6th to 17th. Registration is open for members and non-members. William J. Smith Kids Doing Shakespeare program is a theater day camp in Thorndon Park in Syracuse. The program begins July 13th and registration is now open. Syracuse Summer Stage has day camps in downtown Syracuse with registration now open. The YMCA of Central New York offers a dozen day camps around Central New York. Weekly sessions on June 29th to September 4th. Registration is open for members and non-members. Onondaga 4-H Summer Camps, presented by the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Onondaga County, to have a day camp in Highland Forest, Pratt's Falls, Oneida Shores, Long Branch, and Upper Onondaga Parks. And that registration is also now open. And Syracuse Children's Theater has a day program in East Syracuse, 1st through 12th grades, with shows and weeks age specific. And the SCT is offering programming to produce 6 shows this summer. From entertainment news and television, Reality Check will examine the checkered history of America's Next Top Model. The directors of Netflix's new docuseries spoke about how the reality TV show helmed by Tyra Banks started out with good intentions and why her interview added more texture to the product, by Amelia Mendez of the LA Times. At its heart, America's Next Top Model was Tyra Banks' show. She originated the reality series concept, assembled the core cast, and anchored its production for 23 cycles, which first aired on UPN before it became the CW. But Reality Check, a new Netflix docuseries now streaming that examines ANTM and its checkered history through the accounts of those who were part of it, is not affiliated with Banks. In fact, the supermodel turned media personality wasn't invited to take the hot seat until well after the production on the series began, said Daniel Sivan, who co-directed Reality Check with his wife. It was like, hey, this can be a great addition, but not a necessity. Lucky for the directors, Banks eventually agreed to an interview, which they said clocked in at about 4 hours and wound up giving the project a little more texture. Banks says she's not done yet with ANTM, despite everything from the years of backlash to personal confrontations that she's had with former contestants. She says in the documentary, it still is on her mind of rebooting it. I feel like my work is not done, Banks said. You have no idea what we've planned for Cycle 25. No new seasons of the show have been announced as of the documentary's release. The pick of the week for what to watch, Tracy Morgan reunites with Tina Fey in the fall and rise of Reggie Dinkins. A disgraced former football player, Tracy Morgan, attempts to rehabilitate his image in the latest NBC comedy series from producer Tina Fey. Daniel Radcliffe, Bobby Moynihan, Erica Alexander, Precious Way, and Jalen Hall will also star. The BAFTA Film Awards will be on Sunday night, and that's hosted by Alan Cummings, the UK's answer to the Oscars. It will be airing for the first time on an American network, on E! Tom Ellis and Nick Gelfo star in the latest crime procedural from FBI producer Dick Wolf in CIA. The series has already undergone numerous changes since it was first ordered as an FBI spinoff, including in losing its original showrunner and one of its stars, Michael Michelle. It airs on Monday nights at 10 p.m. on CBS. Scrubs is going to return, and it ran for 7 seasons on NBC and 2 more on ABC. The stars Zach Braff, Donald Faison, Sarah Chalk, Julie Rise, and John McGinley return from the original series, while new cast members include Vanessa Bayer and Joel Kim Booster, Wednesday at 8 p.m. on ABC. And Survivor, the premiere of the landmark competition show's 50th season, runs 3 hours with returns of past contestants for this episode, starting Wednesday night, 8 p.m. on CBS. In other entertainment news, a slightly terrifying new Elvis movie is a big, ambitious effort, by John Kay from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Baz Luhrmann's epic Elvis Presley in Concert requires its own category. Not quite a concert film, though filled with Elvis performance footage, not a documentary, although the king himself narrates what is essentially his life story. Baz was pretty clear the words concert film and documentary were taboo, said the film's executive producer and editor, Jonathan Redman. The term we're kind of using is tone poem, which means it's meant to be a little more abstract, a little more poetic. Redman also worked on Luhrmann's Elvis 22 biopic, nominated for an Oscar for the best film editing, In that process, the creative team uncovered dozens of hours of priceless Elvis concert and rehearsal footage. The tone poem concept was born. I'm not sure about you, but I like those movies with the music, so I'll probably go see it. Let's take a look at what Sally Brompton is giving us for daily horoscopes. Pisces, born February 20th to March 20th. Give yourself permission to enjoy life and then do everything in your power to change those gray skies to blue. For Aries, born March 21st to April 20th, if you ignore the so-called experts and follow your instincts, you will end up in a very good place. For Taurus, April 21st to May 21st, if you are in any way dissatisfied with how things have worked out of late, then do something about it. Gemini, May 22nd to June 21st. Venus-Jupiter link is good news for anything to do with your career and your finances. If you think you deserve a raise, then let your employers know about it. Cancer, June 22nd to July 23rd. You're on the move this weekend. You might meet some very interesting people, and one of them is destined to become a major friend and ally. Leo, 24th of July to August 23rd. Take life in stride and don't be tempted to join those who preach nothing but doom and gloom. The world is a far better place than most people realize, so approach it with a smile on your face and watch it smile back at you. For Virgos, August 24th to September 23rd, Lady Luck is on your side at the moment, and where partnerships, friendships, and affairs of the heart are concerned, you can't put a foot wrong. For Libra, September 24th to October 23rd, you're due a lucky break on the work front, and the planets suggest strongly it will arrive soon. Even if it doesn't, your stock will continue to rise, and it won't be long before an opportunity to prove yourself comes along. Scorpio, October 24th to November 22nd. It's not often that you indulge in a little of what you fancy, but the invitation to do so is right there in front of you. Sagittarius, November 23rd to December 21st. This message of the stars this weekend is you should put your feet up and let other people make those difficult decisions. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 20th. What occurs this weekend will encourage you to come out of your shell and socialize with people whose life outlook is very much like your own. And Aquarius, January 21st to February 19th. What happens over the next weekend will come as a pleasant surprise, not the least because you were expecting news of a very different kind. The only bad news will be for those of your colleagues who have not been making much of an effort lately. We have two obituaries to announce this weekend in the paper. Mary L. Kennedy, 77 of Marcy, New York. Their celebration of life will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, February 24th at St. Peter's Church in Utica, where a massive Christian burial will be celebrated. You can check johnlmattfuneralhome.com for more information. And John Forrest Young, 41, his services will be Saturday, February 28th. At the Kingdom Harvest Apostolic Church, 706 North Madison Street in Rome. Calling hours 11 a.m. Funeral service at noon. You can live stream available on the church's Facebook page. And to leave you with a smile, a couple Sunday comics. In the family circus, it looks like mom is trying to take a shower. Everybody's knocking at the door. Mommy, open up. Mommy, mommy, mommy. Urgent, urgent. She opens the door, and two of them are standing there saying, "We're thirsty." Doesn't that always happen? In the Lockhorns, Mrs. says to Mr., "If you want to run everything, Leroy, why don't you start with the vacuum cleaner?" And last but not least, the Wizard of Id. There's a snowman, and a gust of wind rolls his head off his body and down to the bottom of the hill. And along comes the wizard and says, "Hey, you look different. Did you get a haircut?" And the snowman says, "I'm just ready for spring." You've been listening to a reading of articles and feature from the February 21st, 22nd weekend edition of the Post Standard. Your reader has been Donna. Thank you for listening.